Sly Dog Music Cast. Now here's your host, the Sly Dog.
Hello everybody and welcome back to the Sly Dog Music Cast. I'm your host, the Sly Dog, and thank you for tuning in to part three of mine and Craig's Fish New Year's Eve 2023 Game Edge performance. It is truly amazing the response these episodes have got. Thank you to everybody that's listened so far. I hope you're enjoying them, and I hope you're gaining a new insight into the band that is Fish. Thank you again to Craig for doing this with me. This has been an absolute blast. I hope you enjoy this. This is the final part. We'll cover the rest of Game Edge here and, of course, share some more thoughts at the end. But enough of me talking. Without further ado, play us in, boys. Next, we got one of I'm pulling something up for this next one. Okay, there we go. Up next, one of my favorites. This song really clicked with me prepping for this episode. AC/DC Bang. This song, straight up, this is just fun. It's catchy. It's kind of silly in a way, imagining this robot hangman,
electronic plug-in robot hangman,
yes, with a money bag for a head.
And did you see the boots? Like, it was, yes, literally 1975 Gene Simmons.
Yeah, it really was. It was, and it almost had like a homemade Halloween costume quality, yeah, to it.
And it's, Trey kept cracking up. Every time, yeah, you put eyes on him, just kept cracking up. I loved it.
Oh yeah. I love it. I love it. The performance is so cool. The lyrics are kind of silly. So cheer up, Palmer, you'll soon be dead. The noose is hanging. At least you won't die wondering. Sit up and take notice. Tell it like it is.
Like it is.
So cool. And then it turns into this wonderful jam. Like not a note misplaced. Like I didn't even realize at one point, someone has timestamped the thing out in the comments on YouTube, and yeah, I didn't realize that it went on for 20 minutes initially.
20 minutes. And that was another surprise, because there's never been jamming in a game hen. It's always been very confined to a set. In fact, when Rob and I talk about Game Henge in our episode from 2015, he mentions that there will be Fish fans, if they ever do Game Henge again, there will be Fish fans who will not be happy, because it will be a set filled with songs and absolutely no stretching out and jamming. When they went into the jam on this, I was like, "They're one of the great things about Fish is like these rules that get created and then breaking them, right, just out of like tradition. Like there's just never, no one would ever expect, but we're telling a story here that's supposed to be concise, that they will go into a 20-minute AC/DC bag, every minute of it fantastic, but they did. And it was just like, and then I was texting Megan, I was like, this never happened before. They've never jammed in a Game Henge set. This is the best night of my life. So it's great. It's a great jam all the way through. It's got lots of cool stuff. In fact, let me just pull up real quick. On the on fish.net, they have given the jam chart status to four songs from this show, two in this set.
Okay.
And they have this to say about AC/DC Bag. In the shadow of a resurrected rhombus, the March of the Multi-Beast opens an improvisational portal fitting of the historic moment. At once dark and strident, sinister and celebratory, what would be an exceptional excursion under any circumstances becomes transformational in context and relentless in effect. Gray's beastly snarl is finally cooled only by the arrival, and I won't give it away, that'll be the next song. But that's the description of the jam in AC/DC Bag, one of the best jams in years. Just so every moment great.
To quote one of the Reddit comments you sent me, this bag is going places, and that it does.
Yeah,
that it does. So
yeah, one of my favorite ones. I can't remember if I sent it to you. It said something like, take this little robot hangman for a ride. Just that sentence is so ridiculous that I love it. I love it.
Yeah, because only like a hand, like if you know what that means. But to an outsider, it's like, huh? It's a totally hot thing. But to you and I, that's hilarious. So yeah.
The weird thing for me is they obviously have songs that are huge jam vehicles, like Down With Disease. Like always, you're not going to get a 5-minute Down With Disease probably anymore. It's interesting to me because having come in on Clifford Ball and watching it so much, like I watched it a lot and I rented it a lot. AC/DC Bag is a concise 3-4 minute song. So I'm always surprised if I listen to an older show and they jam out AC/DC Bag because I'm not used to it. So, and here it was just like even better because I still don't expect it. I never expect it. And they took it for a ride, I think another time earlier in the tour, and people were like, oh yeah. And it's, I love it as a jam vehicle. It's great, but it's a super fun song. Just to give an idea of where we are in the story, in the original cassette version, the narration before AC/DC Bag tells us that, and this is usually later in the story, it's been shuffled around a little bit. Meanwhile, in Prussia, which Wilson is the king of Prussia, Prussia being a place in Pennsylvania that I'm familiar with, Wilson orders the execution of his accountant, Mr. Palmer, who you mentioned, who was caught embezzling funds in a rebellion. During AC/DC Bag, Palmer is hung in the public square by the AC/DC Bag, a robotic hangman with a bag over his head. Wilson delivers a speech condemning him to death. But it is just a straight up rocker. One of the interesting things is it's become kind of a rocker. If you go back and watch that 94 show, it's got funk to it. And in the 88 show, even more, like, you know, now he kind of just plays the chords. Dum, 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 dum. Like he's all over the fretboard doing all kinds of like weird riffs in between the chords. And it's really funky. That's kind of, I feel like it's been lost to become more of a standard rock song. So anybody that's interested, check out some of those earlier versions, particularly that 94, the July 8th, 94, I believe, Game Hen show. It's really great. And it pops up on YouTube. It's a show they released during the pandemic on YouTube. They would put up a show every week. Was it? No, every month? No, every week.
Dinner and a
every
movie,
week
right?
They would dinner and a movie. During the pandemic, they put up from throughout the years, including one from 89, which was wild. Some guy with a camcorder with effects like came up to them before the show and were like, for a fee, I'll film your show. And they were like, yeah, all right. And he's doing all these weird kind of like, you know, negative color and just weird effects. And he's like right up on Trey. Like they're just at a club. And then, you know, moving like 3 inches and there's Mike's face, like on this tiny stage. But they gave us a show every week for, and I think we got like 36 shows in the end before they stopped doing it. But this one, the Gamehenge one, was one of the best. And they put up the whole show. And it was the first time I believe that at least at first, I'm definitely that any video footage that come out of a Game Hen show. I don't know if there's ever been like audience footage. There's a ton of like VHS shot bootlegs from the 90s that I'm still going through a bunch of shows. So I don't know what exists, but that Game Hen pops up on YouTube from time to time. Look for it. It's and they're on fire during that show. Absolute fire.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, that 94 show is wonderful. So it's cool to see the progression too. If you watch that and you watch this one, like you can see how far they've come, even like just in size of venue. It's insane.
Yeah.
But yeah.
AC Bag is a song that still gets performed. They've done it 330 times. This is an early one, first played in 86. First known performance. And it's one that you'll get probably, let's see, looking at 2023, we got five of them before this one. In 2022, there were three. 2021, there were four. So you get a couple times a year. It's not one of the every four shows kind of song, but
yeah.
But you get it. You can get it. It's not a white whale by any means. It might be the most played. I'm curious about that as we go forward.
It's probably like you know, you've got your tweezers that get played a lot, and then this is probably like in the rung below that, I'm guessing.
Yeah. I would say this is second tier in terms of frequency. Yeah, that sounds about right. All it's right. Not a surprise when it comes around and you're always like, oh, cool, AC/DC bag.
Nice. Yep, the happiest little song about an execution I could think of. So good.
So great. It is.
And now we're gonna slow things down, take a different vibe, because arriving on the multi-beast is Colonel Corbin's love interest, Teela. Nice little ballad with Paige on the lead vocals. I like this song's dreamy vibe. It kind of almost has like an Eagles or America like quality to it, like 70s rock a little bit. I hadn't heard
very this breezy
one. Yeah, very breezy, like horse with no name type of breezy. Like, yeah. I'd not heard this before watching the 94 show, and it stood out to me then, and it stood out to me watching the 2023 show. It's just a wonderful little song. Corbin is in love with Teela, and Teela is just not really. I don't think she is. I don't get that vibe. I get the vibe that she's like, because even it's described like she's very streetwise, and you know, she's part of the rebellion, and Corbin is just smitten.
Before we get into, and I will say this is one of the most beautiful songs in Fish's catalog. If you think of Fish as, you know, Grateful Dead hippie shit, give a listen to Teela. It's got a very smooth vocal from Paige. It's gorgeous musically and vocally and lyrically. It's Trey mentions in the thesis that it's one of the songs he's written without humor, which is unusual for him.
Yeah.
It is a straight kind of ballad. To give an idea of where this was in the story, this was earlier on the demo. This is second song after the Lizards, not including Man Who Stepped In Yesterday as an opening. So the narration before it on the cassette tells us that Rutherford, when he does dive in during Lizards, when he sinks, Rutherford is pulled out of the water by a hairy and powerful creature known as the Unit Monster. The Unit Monster protects and travels with Teela, a rebel who rides a two-toned multi-beast. And then in Teela, Forbin falls in love with Teela when he first sees her and views her as a jewel of Wilson's foul domain. He was born in a hut in the shadow of Wilson's castle and was forced into a life of struggle and toil. He grew to meet Wilson and joined a rebellion against him. Now, on stage at New Year's, it was a beautiful display of aerial dancing.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of teasing, getting close to Forbin, and then just kind of flying away. It was beautiful. One of the visual highlights of this show, and there are many, I loved her coming through the crowd on, on multi-beast.
The multi-beast, yeah.
Just like she was kind of one, it was in two halves and she was yeah. the middle. But it worked. And then, you know, she got to the stage and she started doing the aerial dancing and it was just gorgeous. A perfect visual for the song. And this is one that's different on the set. Arguably the kind of peak of Teela is the Teela, jewel of Wilson's foul domain. But on the demo, it's different. It's Teela, jewel of Wilson's foul domain. Like, he doesn't hold those notes. There's entirely different verses, and it's performed that way or close to it in the 88 show as well. So Teela underwent some changes before became kind of like a Fish staple. But one of my absolute favorite Fish songs, and I at least at the time of the thesis, Cray's favorite. It has only been played 92 times in the course of almost 1900 shows since it debuted at Nectar's in 1988 as part of what we think is the first Gamehenge. One that I would have loved to have seen. It's always great. Arrangement's great. Everything about it is just gorgeous.
Absolutely, yeah. So this would be like, if you were to go see Fish in this new year and they played this, like, this would like probably make the night for you.
Oh yeah, yeah. There were, when I saw, not to sidetrack tremendously, but yeah. Like I said, my first Fish show was maybe out of the 20 some songs they played, I might have known six or seven. There was a lot I did not know. And it was basically just because, you know, you listen sometimes to eras of Fish. Like, I avoided their 2003, 2004 shows forever because I looked at it as bad vibes. There are some great shows in there and there are some really horrible shows in there. But I just hadn't come across shows in my listening of shows that introduced me to these songs, some of them which are huge, but like weren't on the Clifford Ball or weren't on a live one.
Right.
But now it's like, oh, wow, I saw that. When I saw these last two shows this summer, I had a couple I really wanted to hear. I really wanted a Carini, got a great one. Waste is a gorgeous Fish song that's a ballad, which is Megan and I, it's our song. They played it the first night in Philly. I remember saying to Rob, I really want a Waste. And he's like, that's a good one to want. And when they played it, I lost it. And then the other one I wanted was Fluffhead, because Megan's dog, a very fluffy, esky buttercup, one of my favorite dogs I've ever met in my life, a complete Muppet. I really wanted a Fluffhead, and Rob was like, that's one I don't think you're going to get. And I don't know that he was ready for the hug I gave him, As soon as I heard those opening notes of Fluffhead to end the first set of the second night in Philly, but I like the three hugest ones I got, and that's good odds. And the rest of the set, all other things I wanted, not as much as those three, but I couldn't have asked for anything more. But yeah, going forward, Attila, really any of the songs from Gamehenge that are in the rarity status of like Attila or A Punch You in the Eye or Lizards, or as we'll get further, A Forbin's Mockingbird, which is what you call the pair of Colonel Forbin's Ascent and Fly Famous Mockingbird. Any of those really old songs I would love. But at this point, I feel like I'm playing with house money. I got the sets I wanted. Whatever I see from this point on, I'm going to be happy with. I'm likely never going to get a Gamehenge, and I'm fine with that. I don't know that it'll ever happen again, but I'll be happy with whatever I get. I hit gold this summer.
You even got my song, like Mine and Mara's.
I did.
Mine and Mara's songs. You got Joy, which is amazing to me. And then when you told me Rob's reaction, I had to laugh because he said he kind of like rolled his eyes and was like, "Oh, Trey's doing his dad rock thing."
So now that I no longer am maintaining a podcast, I'm going to tell you this about Rob. I don't know that we won't have an episode where he can dispute this. two things. It wasn't so much that they were playing Joy. It was the placement of Joy after Carini.
Yeah, which I thought was interesting. Yeah.
Now, look, if Fish is going to give you a ballad in the second set, that's something that fans do not love. Fans, when I was getting into Fish around, when I first saw them, it was 2016. And they have a song on the Fuego album called The Line. Which, taken on its own, is, you know, it's whatever. At a show, its placement made people angry all the time. There was a what people were calling the fourth quarter problem, which was the second half of the second set. People want to be taken to crazy places, and The Line is not going to do it. Joy is probably not going to do it. But like I think there's a perfect song they can use in this instance. Like if they have a huge jam vehicle, they often have a breather. Joy, I thought, was decent. I thought Joy was a decent breather. I didn't have a problem with Joy. I can understand it with some songs and what they come out of. But I was like, they just gave us two raging jams to open the second set. I'm fine with Joy being a third song. But I was just going to say Trey. Oh, my God. Rob turned to me and he's like, "This is a weird choice." Like he wasn't, I don't know that he was angry at it as much as he was just like, "Yeah, I don't know that I would have put this here." Now, they also have a song called A Life Beyond the Dream, which is newer. I think it's a beautiful ballad. It's plaintive. It's dad Trey. It's open chords, but it's got a great chorus, got a great guitar solo, and it's anthemic in the way that a ballad can be anthemic. But people do not like it at the end of a Fish show. Sometimes it gets in the encore that really winds people up. I'm fine with it. And he was deflated as soon as they started. And I knew he would be. And I was fine. I was obviously fine with it. It's a song I'd never seen before. I love the song. But the funny thing about it is he was so angry at it, but I kept looking at him out of the corner of my eye and just like, "Beyond the Dream." He was singing along. He doesn't want that old wolf. He's 10 years younger than me. That old crusty wolf doesn't want you to think that he was singing along to A Life Beyond the Dream, but he absolutely was. He was a different man after he got that hug during Fluffhead. Let me tell you that.
Fish changes people and Fish brings people together.
They do. That's something I learned.
Absolutely. All right. Holy yeah. Shit. Wow. We've been, all right. We're not going to speed through the last songs, but wow, we have.
I think we can. Yeah, we can. I can tighten it up. I have been sidetracking a lot. I am conscious of that.
This is a fun episode. Like I'm just loving this. Like this is a chaotic time of year at work. So I needed this. I need all the soundtracks. Well,
no, I hear you. And the next song we should talk about in the speed in which they play it.
Well, that's going to be interesting because so we go from this wonderful, beautiful little 70s rock ballad I'm sorry. For the listeners, we've been doing this for probably about 2.5 hours, and my wife just texted me, "Are we almost done?" So.
We tell her we just got to talking about Game Henry. It's been all set up for the last two and a half hours. Jesus Christ. Make the rest of the episode, or at least us talking about this song, 1.5 when you mix and edit it down.
I'm gonna see if I can do that, or at least a version of that. Oh man.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we go from this wonderful, like 70s almost soft rock type of ballad where Forbin is in love and has met the lady he wants to be the master of his hose. We move into, yeah, I had to throw one in there. I had to throw.
I was wondering what it was going to be. I knew it was coming. I should have seen it with Hose Masters. I should have known it was
Yep,
coming.
yep, yep. There had to be a dick joke. But we move into one of my favorite Fish songs. I know it as the opening to track to Picture of ne Nectar, Llama, Taboot, Taboot, Llama, Taboot, Taboot.
Turquoise mountains, nesting the birds in sight. Came up from the valley, both sides out of time. To the cold, steady rain, rain up and down. Poking up and down, I'm lava to boot, I want to boot to boot. Trigger blast, crash, ramish, race seeds, I start to run. It's the loudest thing I ever heard, and it'll be my time to come. Get the delta.
Also,
Love this.
take a look at the liner notes picture of Nectar. It does mention it as being a song that's part of Gamehenge.
Ooh, I'm gonna have to pull out the CD and look at that later.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is wonderful, chaotic Fish energy, a proper rager from the drums to that screaming, beefy organ. John Fishman just beasting out here. This is,
Oh,
comes
yeah.
in chaotic and ends chaotic. I adore this song. This is a frequent, like, when I, if I just want to hear like a Fish song, I don't have time to listen to an album. This is one of my go-tos because it just makes me
Yeah.
so happy. And it's one of those ones I listen to and go like, why do people say this band can't play? Like, this is some
It's one I listen to and
tight shit.
I'm like, it is. It's one I listen to and I'm like, how did Trey get those fucking words out? I'll never be able to sing this song as fast as he does. It's insane. One of the funny things about Llama is they've been playing a slow version lately. And people
Oh.
are like, it's because Trey can't do it fast anymore, and he gets winded during it. Let's be honest, but this version should put all of that talk to rest because this was damn close to 1990s speed.
Oh,
And
yeah.
Fish songs have fluctuated in terms of getting slower as the years go on. This is one that they were like, fuck it, we're going for it, and it was great. And he. Awesome. He did it. He got it out. And those are some crazy lyrics in the song at the speed he sings them.
Oh man, Llama Taboot Taboot, like just that little line lives in my head rent free, and I will say it out loud to myself sometimes just because I don't know, there's something about it, like it puts a smile on your face. Llama Taboot Taboot.
Yeah, it's great. And it was only it became part of the live versions of Gamehenge in 94. So it was not part of the demo tape or the first three. I should say that AC/DC Bag and Teela straight through every performance of Gamehenge and the demo, always part of the story. This one becomes part of the story later. Battle that takes place years after the overthrow of Wilson. In this version, it takes place when Teela, Forbin, and Rutherford first arrive at the rebel base. But yeah, it's a scorcher, absolute scorcher. I was kind of surprised to hear this. I'd kind of forgotten about it, like being part of some of the Gamehenge ones. And just at the speed it came at me with, I was very pleased about
What's interesting,
Taboot.
The interesting thing I found with this one was when I watched the 94 performance, it was technically before we went through the door. They played it before they went through the doorway. So, yep. And this time it's moved like right into the middle of the whole story. So again, it's those songs kind of shifting around. Like you can tell this story a number of ways.
Yeah. So absolutely. Cool. And this also, also a frequent opener, in their earlier days. This was used as an opener a lot.
Oh yeah. I bet this is, you go to a show and this starts, you're hooked. You're in. Awesome. Yeah, you got any little stats for this one, or should we move into another absolute beast of a song?
Just quickly, it's been played 320 times since its debut in 1990, a little over 1,500 shows. Not a rarity by any means, but a little more rare these days. But yeah, we're going into something big here. So let's hit it.
Dun dun dun.
Wilson.
There we go. You got this song live. This opened your first Phish show, right?
It did. I couldn't have been happier. Like, to see Phish for the first time was a surreal experience. Just because the crowd is much different, much more different than any show I've been to, and also much friendlier. People give people shit, and I'm not talking about drugs, although there's enough of that too. But like, people give you gifts. Like, I got a ticket stub replica since they stopped giving out physical tickets. People just bring stuff. There's a guy I follow on Instagram, You Enjoy My Data, who does these Phish charts and graphs on paper. And he made little zines that he gave out at the Madison Square Garden shows. So, I was completely jazzed and just like a weird atmosphere. And for them to come out, and I'm able to immediately scream Wilson after they jump on stage, I couldn't have asked for like crowd participation to open my first Phish show. Could not have asked for anything more. That was one of the highlights of that weird show for me. The opening was just great.
This song rocks, and it rocks hard. This would be a song I would play for people. Like, hey, if you think Phish is just that weird jam band, like if you're just a rock fan, you're gonna love this song, even though the lyrics probably make no sense to you. And for a long time, I wondered what exactly, you know, who exactly he's talking about. It's still fun. It just rocks. It's fun to listen to the band play it. It's not on any of the studio albums. It's probably most known for the version on a real live one, which is my go-to. I dig it. It's just, it's a freight train. It's a freight train.
Yeah.
I love it.
I don't think any of these songs, with the exception of the last, are on any Phish albums. There's a little bit of one of them on one of their demos that was released kind of as a posthumous album later. But when it comes down to it, none of these are on like standard Phish albums. It's another one that's just kind of like a very beloved song that is, and this one absolutely has legs. It's been played 299 times since 86. This is one that you have a pretty good chance of seeing, obviously, because I saw it.
Yeah.
We talk about the performance, because the one that we get New Year's has an added bonus. Mm-hmm. To tell you where we are in this story, that originally came earlier after Teela. Teela leads Forbin and Rutherford to the rebels' hidden base deep in the forest. As they approach, chants of Wilson can be heard. But the chants are not in praise of Wilson. They are chants of hatred. By the way, it's very odd to listen to a Fish show from like the 90s where they play the doo-doo, doo-doo, and the audience does not respond with Wilson. It's right. Something that didn't happen. I think a live one might be the first show that happened. I'm not completely 100% sure of that, but I think it is. And I think that's the first time that the crowd actually did the Wilson chant. And then Forbin is introduced to the leader of the rebellion, a lizard named Erend Wolf. In the New Year's, it has changed to a female and is now called the Wolf. He learns that Erend's son, Roger, was executed on suspicion of treason. Erend announces his hatred for Wilson for ordering the execution, and then we'd go into AC/DC bag in the original. Do you want to talk about the live performance we get on New Year's?
Yeah, the Wolf. I don't know the actress's name off the top of my head. But
Joe Lampert.
Joe Lampert?
Yeah.
She's great. She kind of does co-lead vocals with Trey on this one. Mm-hmm. Kind of adding a lot of like Broadway flair to the way she sings it.
Fair? Yeah.
And the chant when this one starts, like the audience already is like into Gamehenge at this point. Like that is a strong, like Trey only has to do that jug it once and the audience already knows what's coming. And it's just so loud. Hair on my arm going up again. So cool. Yeah. I like the kind of Broadway musical theater vibe that they gave this one. I thought it worked really well. It was surprising at first, but I've watched the show twice and yeah, I dig it. I dig this version of it.
Yeah, I don't want to say off-putting, but I just didn't expect it. As I've watched it repeatedly, I've come to love it more. I think she's great in the role. They could have gone with it. It's interesting that that she sings this, because technically there are a lot of songs in Gamehenge that are sung from the point of view of different characters. So technically, a lot of vocals could have been shared. It's interesting that this is the one that they went with, being Wilson. But it makes sense. It's a balls out rocker. She's, you know, prancing around the stage and just fucking giving it her all. Just the vocals, her vocals, incredible. You know, taking crazy high notes, you know, alongside Trey's usual warm blanket vocal. One of the highlights of the show. I thought she was great.
Absolutely. Amazing song. All right, up next, we got one of my favorite discoveries doing this podcast, The Sloth. This song is catchy, and I really wish there was like a studio version of this song, because like I love this song so much. It's this funky rock rave up. The Sloth is a person that he's an assassin, essentially. He's hired to kill Wilson, but in the original story he succeeds. In this show he is too slow, and it's great watching this one, because Trey is cracking up because the sloth is moving comically slow across the stage, and Wilson's just there like, hey, how are you doing? Just chilling. Holding the book.
Fawning.
Like, yeah. Just kind of preening. It's so silly. And the song is great. They call me the sloth. I love Italian spaghetti. Yeah,
this... great call and response vocals on this. This is another one that in the 88 version, the cassette's got a different ending. And you hear on the 1988 live version, when Trey is telling the story, he's like, and you all know who's hired to kill Wilson, or something to that effect. And there's a little bit of time before they start the song, and you hear Paige say, are we doing the whole 11 thing? At that point, there was a part of the song at the end that was in 11 time, which I think does not, I'm fairly certain it doesn't stick around very long. I might be wrong. For some reason, I'm having doubts about that. But yeah, Paige is like, and it seems like maybe he's not ready to play the whole thing. So it makes me wonder if that game hinge was like an off the cuff, let's just do it. And then he's just like, wait, are we doing like the whole thing? So that's kind of interesting. But yeah, the sloth, great. In the original version of the story, once the sloth kills Wilson, Aaron Wolf becomes the next tyrant. This doesn't happen in the most recent telling of the story. Aaron, or the wolf in this version, just kind of the story kind of end there, and there's no taking over of Wilson, of his rule.
I get the feeling this was probably one of the rarer tracks. I'm guessing, like, I'm something tells me this does not get played a lot.
Yeah, by the way, Wilson and the Sloth played in every version, including the cassette. The Sloth 176 times, so I would say that this would be below an AC/DC bag.
Yeah.
Not quite as rare as some of the other ones, but probably getting there. Looking at the last few years, 10 times since 2015.
Oh, wow.
So that's not huge. That's not huge. And pretty sporadic before that. So yeah, you don't get this one a lot. And it was first played in 87.
Yes.
Yeah, fantastic song.
I dig it. And coming up next, I know we got one of your favorites, Divided Sky. Yeah. Is a little more freeform and jammy. It's got like that chant. This is the one song that really kind of drags for me. I think the jam goes a bit long on this one.
And interesting.
It's the only one I find myself looking at my watch going, okay, next song, please. But yeah, it's not bad. It's pretty. There's some great chords in it. There's some more great playing. Just musically, it's gorgeous, but it just, I don't know, I feel like it meanders just a little bit for me, Divided Sky.
Now, I think there are two things that don't do this song any favors. First, it's the Divided Sky chant that is the essentially a chant that the lizards performed as they stood on the rhombus as part of the story. It's only been in since 94. Now, on Analyze Fish, this was one of the songs that was mocked. And they played the chant where Scott was like, why the fuck are you playing this song for me? And then after that, there's a weird kind of section where it is a musical palindrome. They play it, and then they play the whole thing backwards, and it's very tinkly, and it is the exact thing that somebody that is a Fish denier who never heard Fish thinks Fish sounds like. That section, before they go into the jumping, is it sounds noodly, and that's not the majority of what Fish does, nor do they do it really very often at all. Once we get out of that, I think the song is fantastic. It's one of those songs where the guitar lead for me is what makes it. Now, Divided Sky is a through composed piece. There's no, the only jamming that you could really call jamming is Trey soloing at the end and doing a different solo. The chords are always the same, arrangement's always the same. If anything, they might different repeats at on the end section, but I think that closing section melody he's playing, and then once he starts to riff on it, is one of my favorite Fish things ever. And again, it's another one that on the Clifford Ball just drew me in. And I was just, and as soon as those two early parts passed, like as soon as it came on, I was like, well, I'm gonna hate this because the parts they played were goofy. But then after that, to me, I thought it was beautiful guitar playing. So it's divisive in that way, but one of my favorites for the you know, what he's playing, you know, on the second half of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew it's one of your favorites. I feel kind of bad kind of saying it meanders, but yeah, it's not bad. I cannot call anything in this set terrible. But yeah. For me, it does feel a bit long, but there's some gorgeous playing in there. Absolutely gorgeous playing.
There's a Divided Sky, I believe, from 94 that brought Trey to tears. I'll have to send you that one. Wow. That is, it's one of the, when people talk about like the best live Fish moments, that's one that comes up. I want to say it's June 94, maybe the 18th, but I'm probably wrong on that. When I find it, I will send it to you.
I look forward to it.
I think you can become a Divided Sky convert. I really do.
Yeah, maybe it's just like one of those ones like, what was the quote you said from the One Fish podcast? Well, maybe you just haven't heard the right antelope yet.
Yeah, and you know what? I hadn't. Like at that point, like I didn't get antelope for a long time. Run Like an Antelope is one of their earliest, like 85, I think, songs. I never got it. And then I saw one night on a live stream and I was like, I get it. I see why people love this. And I got it in Philly on the second night. And there's just one moment during it where Trey is just like looking at the audience with this crazy demonic look on his face while he's playing these riffs. Just a great, and usually like a set closer or show closer. It's one of the coveted Fish tracks, Run Like an Antelope. But if we start talking about all that stuff, this will definitely be a week long podcast.
Oh yeah. We'll be here another hour. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Divided Sky. Interesting song. Any little tidbits you want to add at the end before we move into the final four?
Yeah, quickly. Played only in the 94 shows onwards. It's been played 434 times. This might be the most. This might be since 87. So this might be the one that's been played the most. I'm betting it probably is. But yeah, love it. Love it.
Interesting. There's another song coming up that would have been my guess for the song that was played the most.
It that might be as well. I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see.
But in the show at this point, they decided to take a 15-minute break. And they come back.
Which is a joke. The 15-minute break was something they always said. We're going to take a 15-minute break, and it was never 15 minutes. It was kind of like something that Trey just always said. And that was another thing brought up on the Analyze Fish podcast, because at some point they decide they're going to go to a show together, which they do twice. Yeah. And they're listening to a track and Trey does this, we'll be back in 15 minutes. And Harris is like, it's a great joke. Like he says 15 minutes, but it's never 15 minutes. And Scott's like, well, what is it? And Harris is like, more like 45. And Scott's like, oh, I don't like this. Like he's already like wanting to back out. He's like, what do you do for 45 minutes? And Harris is like, oh, you go drop your bean. They're ready for the second set. So, yeah. When he said the 15 minutes, I was like, ah, the joke.
You got to rehydrate at a fish show. Otherwise, you're going to die. You're just straight up going to die.
The Philly show was the hottest day of the summer, two of them. And I had just gone through a fairly scary heart scare. And my heart rate those two nights on, you know, was through the roof. I thought I was going to die. And I was like, if I do, I hope it's during a divided sky. I did not get one. And I'm still here. So we're fine. But yeah, hydration, absolutely. I had to buy myself this fifth now
holding at the
show. Because they have water refill stations. So I bought this and kept hydrated all night. You got to do it.
Nice. All right. So I think they start the third set very wisely with McGruff and the Watchful Host Masters.
I've alternated my meager flock to the shores of the Baltic Sea. The teeth of time have stolen mind of how things should be. My cave, my house, my turning wheel, my little docking pup. The march of Colonel Foreman and his fleet hound called McGruff. The crime of countless work dogs has collected in my sink. I tie my nose with spandex hose before I get a drink. We lie on frozen warthogs with its poison in our minds, while the ferns that spot our children are encased in orange wine.
I like that because it's kind of a recounting of the story from another perspective. And it ended other performances at Gamehenge. It's a good way if you want to get a little overview of the story. It's a good song to listen to. Bit of a slower downbeat number maybe to come back with, but it does kind of kick up a bit as the story and the song move forward. There's some really pretty guitar lines and some piano lines. It's a little Steely Dan-ish, and I like the joke at the end about the $22 beers.
Yes. Some great chatter during that show. Yeah, McGruff has been played in every live version, but is not on the original cassette. Again, it's telling the story of Colonel Forbin's, I mean, it's named after his dog. So obviously, lyrically, completely part of the story. So absolutely fits here. But yeah, great way to open the second set. Also on the rarer side, only played 118 times since 1985. This is a very early one. Early cassettes, it might be called Skippy the Wonder Mouse, which is the song that it kind of grew out of. And also, you might be interested to know that when they played University of Vermont, May 3rd, 1985, it followed Whipping Post.
That's awesome.
With an arrow. So we got, there are two arrows in the fifth universe. There's a carrot and then the natural arrow. If you're looking at a fifth set list on fifth.net, the carrot on its side means that they start the next song without any space between the song. So while the other song's dying out, they'll start the next one. An arrow means they seamlessly go from the song before it into the next song by way of jam or just by way of a chord, a similar chord, whatever, you know, however we get there. But there is an arrow going from Whipping Post into McGruff. So that's something that happened once.
That's incredible. And I feel like we might have got there. This next one might be an arrow transition a little bit into Colonel Corbin's scent.
The mountain and wiped away the beads of sweat that glistened on his brow. His tired feet were buried in the quagmire, and his bloodshot eyes saw all that lay between him and fulfillment of his vow. And he felt his fingers wrap around a knotted root, and pull his body upwards to a sea-green mossy boulder. He dragged his weary body up the mountain.
It felt like a really smooth transition. It has a similar energy to the other song, and it's a song about Forbin going to see the famous Mockingbird. I didn't write much about this song, but I did write there are some weird, dark, caustic moments in this one musically.
Yeah. Don't. Yeah, there's some kind of like angular, before it goes into like a very kind of more mellow verse. Colonel Forbin, very much a storytelling song. Always paired, at least since very early days, maybe in the first songwriting days, maybe not, but you always get it with Mockingbird. They're always played as a pair. They're always with an asterisk because I've never heard every version, but usually some kind of narration between Forbin's and Mockingbird, even if it's played in a set now. So during the breakdown, when you go into Mockingbird, he'll always start some kind of monologue. So yeah, a very central part of the story, to give you an idea of where we are. As for Colonel Forbin's ascent, Forbin climbs up the mountain. Now, before this, Forbin visits Teela, proclaims his love for her, but then Rutherford storms in and strangles both the unit monster and Teela to death. This is not something
Oof.
that happens in every version. It did not happen on New Year's. Forbin demands to know why, and Erend explains that Teela was a spy who had been secretly sending information to Wilson using messenger birds called spotted stripers, which is why in the New Year show, Cray is conversing with the grandmother about Teela being a spy, and he's like, "I'm not going to tell." It's just one of those things where it's kind of been like, well, this was in some of the versions, and then not. So he was having a little fun with mentioning the spy thing. Roger's death had raised suspicion, but Palmer's confirmed it. Enraged, Forbin storms out, promising to get the helping friendly book for them. So during Colonel Forbin's ascent, Forbin climbs up the mountain and speaks with Iculus. Iculus is another song that's part of Gamehenge that's also coveted. It's great. I can't believe it's not part of this one at the very least, but I also think there might be a reason for that. Iculus promises to help Forbin and the lizards regain the knowledge that they lack. But he warns them that knowledge, though seemingly innocent and pure, can become a deadly weapon in the hands of avarice and greed. All the same, Iculus sends his friend, the famous Mockingbird, to steal the helping friendly book back from Wilson. Before we get into that, Colonel Forbin's ascent 129 times since 1988. These two together, Mockingbird was played a couple more times earlier. These two together are pretty much a rarity. These days, you might get them once a year, if
Wow.
that. But yeah, anything else on the ascent? He climbs the rhombus during the show.
That was cool. That looks so cool.
Yeah, it was great. And stands on the rhombus, for the remainder of the song before we transition into what is arguably the second part of this suite.
Yep, Fly Famous Mockingbird.
Oh,
got big Allman Brother energy. Love it. Love the vibes here. Trey doing some absolutely wonderful guitar, and we get a lovely choir of vocalists. A wonderful, dreamy highlight of the show. As the song progresses, like, I really hear just more great guitar playing from Trey. It's amazing. I love this. Was a big another big highlight for me. I really liked Fly Famous Mockingbird, and I love the Mockingbird going over the crowd. I thought that looked really cool.
Right. So what happens in this part of the story, the Mockingbird flies to Wilson's castle, takes the helping friendly book, and flies it back to the rebel base. A couple things about this song. It's a tough one for Trey to play these days. The arpeggios in these, he messes up more often than he doesn't. I thought he was fantastic on the New Year's show. They obviously practiced. And that was kind of the consensus. Like, when they were playing this, I went onto Reddit and I opened my mouth. I'm usually just a lurker. And I was like, has anybody noticed they're playing these songs like better than they've played them in the last 10 years? Like, they weren't, you know, kind of flawless 90s versions. There were some stumbles, but it was, they did it way better than they have been. Mockingbird, a couple things. The choir on this is great. There's also a synth that happens that Paige is not playing. So they had a synth player triggered. Also, the backing vocalists were not on stage. I assume they were live and not on tape, because these songs can be weird lengths, and I can't see it. The way they kind of stretch out parts of these songs sometimes, I don't see them playing it to like a click or anything. I could be wrong. But this one had like the choir and the synth, which added a beautiful texture to that scene of the Mockingbird flying around Madison Square Garden. When shows came back after COVID, they had to cancel their New Year's shows during COVID, and they did make up shows in April. And they did a great show where there were dolphins flying around, like drones of dolphins flying around Madison Square Garden. This was kind of a callback to that, having the Mockingbird. Now, what is supposed to happen is that, so in the original story, Erin and Rutherford are astonished to see the helping friendly book, which is delivered by the Mockingbird. Erin Wolf seizes the book, and that's when he fastens the Mockingbird to a pole with glue and rubber bands, puts the book to work for him, and then sets out to find a man who will kill Wilson. That's when the sloth happens in the original. Now, what didn't happen was the Mockingbird never made it to the stage to deliver the helping friendly book to Colonel Foreman, because somebody in the audience touched it and it went down. Oh, so no. If you watch again, at some point you stop seeing the bird, and there's a shot of Paige and he starts to look over, and then he looks over and just starts cracking up. And then at some point it turns to Trey, who's concentrating because it's a fucking hard song to play. And he kind of looks in that direction. You can see he's distracted, like, oh, shit, like, something just happened. And you see Colonel Forbin with his arms out, like, oh, no. Like, so it was never delivered. So it never made it to the stage, which is a huge part of the story. It might be why Iculus wasn't played. There was, and I don't know that for certain, but there's speculation that Iculus was supposed to be part of the song or part of the show. And the whole helping friendly book, you know, that whole gag getting kind of ruined, put an end to that. But who knows? Regardless, the helping friendly book should have gotten to the stage and while he was there, and he should have been holding it, but that does not happen. But we can assume it happens because it's supposed to happen.
Oh, man, I didn't know that. That's there had to be one Spinal Tap moment in this whole production going on. This whole Broadway style production, there needed to be one Spinal Tap moment, and it's the freaking bird.
You know, people were quick to blame, like, the fucking audience had to touch the thing. But there were a bunch of people that were near it that also said they didn't even touch it. It kind of like flew in that direction and was not stopping. So who knows what the real story is, but it could have just been very well that the drone kind of just went out of bounds and started to go towards somebody. Maybe they put their hand up just to not get hit by it. But whatever it was, it ended up kind of killing the bird. So that's what happened to the famous Mockingbird.
Yep.
Did another wrinkle in the story.
Mockingbird down. And then we get the ending, which is kind of confusing, actually, I think. I find the ending a little confusing because I'm not sure what happened. I had my theory earlier, but I'm not sure if it's sound. We get the New Year's, we get our old Lang Syne and all that, and then a volcanic eruption, and we move into a wonderful, excellent, funky Split Open and Melt.
Mountain was an active volcano.
Favorite Fish songs. This is an excellent performance. Extra funky. The band's just cooking. I love it on Lawn Boy. I love it at the end of Hoist. And I love it here. They just take it out for a good jam. That's a hell of a way to start 2024. Like, if that's where Fish is starting in 2024, like, God knows what they're going to do next. Because, like, that you set the bar high. Even though that's a song you guys play a lot, they set it high.
Yeah. It's become a very successful jam vehicle, particularly this year. Every version, I'm fairly certain, at least all the ones I remember, and I should say that there's a Live Fish app that is $10 a month for the smallest package, which just is MP3 quality. If you want lossless, it's $20. And they upload each show the morning after the show. So this year I listened to every Fish show the morning after. There are years where I've fallen off. I've listened to some depending on what was going on. This year I listened to all of them. Split has had a very, I should call it Melt. Melt has had a very good year. Usually going into very dissonant territory.
Yeah.
And sometimes just straight up noise. But yeah, it's a great song. And interesting that the version that is on Hoist, obviously it's a song on Lawn Boy, but the version on Hoist is actually part of a jam from that song that they put at the end of the album. And that's the only, they've put live versions as bonus tracks on like Junta, and maybe some others that I'm not aware of, but this is the first time that like an actual live performance was part of the fifth studio album. And it comes from Split Open and Melt. Split Open and Melt, just, you know, great, but I love the kind of a cappella break. Well, it's got slight instrumentation, but a cappella for the terms of this conversation, it's very Beach Boys-esque. Like, I hear that and I think Smile, you know, the water, very Beach Boys, which surprised me when I first heard it. But yeah, another one of my absolute favorites. And yeah, I'm not sure exactly how this ends the story. Like you said, and Trey tells Jimmy's grandma, also, did you know that the mountain is an active volcano? And she's like, when she leaves the stage, the lizards reappear. The lizards are alive. But also, do they suffer death in this volcano? Don't know. I prefer to think not. I want the lizards to have a happy ending. It seems that he has cut like a lot of the negative aspects out of the story for this version. I can't, it doesn't seem to make sense to me that he'd end it on a downer where all the lizards die. But who knows? That's why some things are left open-ended. And this one, in my opinion, certainly was. It was interesting. In terms, it's never been played as part of Gamehenge. I do think I can't find anything, obviously, because now it's changed and it was played. I feel like I might have seen it referenced before as part of Gamehenge and been like, yeah, I don't know how that's part of Gamehenge, like some of the other songs I mentioned. But I can't remember if that was the case or not. Now it's part of Gamehenge because they put it here. And it's Trey's that he can do whatever he wants. He can put whatever song in it he wants. So whether a song is part of Gamehenge or not, I don't get bent out of shape about it. Like you were talking about the Beach Boys' Smile. I was always kind of fascinated with that before they put out the official version because it was an unfinished album. People had their theories as to how it would be sequenced. And there was like a handwritten track list that raised more questions than answers. So like it was this thing that people puzzled over for years. And even it's another thing, much like Fish, I hated the Beach Boys. In fact, still do. I love Smile, and that's pretty much it. I can deal with Pet Sounds. I mean, Pet Sounds is great, but I think Smile is a masterpiece. But it was one of those things I was fascinated with because it was just like it was an unfinished thing that people are trying to finish. And Gamehenge is kind of the same thing. It's always been shifting. Songs have always been shifted around. Pieces of the story have changed. And I think that's what kind of what's fun about it. Like it doesn't have to be the same story every time. Poster Nutbag has died a bunch of times over 40 years. Gamehenge keeps changing. That's the great thing about Gamehenge.
Absolutely. And that is brings it to its
There you
triumphant
go.
ending. Such a
Thus.
great closing. And then because we're low on time, we're not going to do track by track on the rest of the set, but from what you described it as, it was pretty much fan service the rest of the night. It was just all the stuff that you want to hear as a Fish fan. Like I know they did You Enjoy Myself. I know they did the original ending. They did Possum as well.
They ended the set after Split Open Melt. They did You Enjoy Myself, which is just one of their most loved tracks. Loving Cup, which is a Rolling Stones cover, one of their most loved covers. They jammed it out. It's on the Jam chart. I think it might be the first Loving Cup on the Jam chart. They usually do it straight. Exile on Main Street was one of the songs they did for Halloween. And then the song that stuck around as an encore for many years. So, and then ending with Possum, which, and ended the set. But Possum, as part of Gamehenge, was only on the original and the 1988 performance. So it was the end of the story very early on and dropped very quickly. But it was a nice nod to the original end of the story by putting it at the end of the set. I thought that was a real cool choice.
Absolutely. And that wraps up the Gamehenge performance.
Woo!
We are here 4.5 hours later, maybe, or maybe 3.5, I don't know. My time's
We
off,
just
but
hit three. We
we
hit
just hit
three.
we hit 3 hours.
We're the length of I think all set two and three during
Oh
this show.
man, I think to bring it all home, Is there anything else you want to say about Fish? Because I feel like you've said a lot about like why this was wonderful and like why you're a Fish fan, but is there anything else you kind of like to add on top of that?
Yeah, just I've had a whole lot of favorite bands over, 50 years of living at this point. I can honestly say, and I've said this before, there's no band that brings me as much joy as Fish. I think I can say at this point they're my favorite band. I don't know that I would have said that pre-pandemic or even parts during. I might not have said it when Porcupine Tree reunited for a tour, but they're usually dormant. So I think I can safely say that Fish is my favorite band. The amount of joy they bring is just I can't really put it into words, which is why I ramble about it. And I it's not something I ever expected. I never expected to be emotional about this stuff. But here we are. I think they're fantastic. And I really the stigma around them is something that really bothers me because there are people I know would love them if they gave them a shot. And even there are some people that listen that go into it like, yeah, I'm not going to like this, which was me in 94 and me in 2000 or whatever. But then, you know, like kind of hearing these a couple times, I was like, there is something here. And I'm glad that I put time in. And it took a long time, but the rewards have been immeasurable. And there's a whole bunch of stuff we didn't talk about that they did during the pandemic that was incredible for their fans. This was just one piece of it, and maybe the biggest. But if this inspires anybody at least to check anything out, or even just listen to this episode, I'm happy with that. Anybody that just gives anything about Fish a chance, I think that that's great. I just wish that, you know, there were more people to rap about Fish with. So thank you for doing it.
No worries. I love talking about music. Fish is fun to talk about. And I love talking about music that brings you joy. Fish brings me joy. Fish brings you a lot of joy. And I think that's the biggest takeaway. Fish, like I said earlier, Fish brings people together. And
we want you to be happy.
We do want you to be happy. Because this is your song too.
That's right. That's right.
All right. So I don't know if you want to, like, I don't know, you are technically a quote unquote retired podcaster at this point. But possible streamer in the future, we shall see.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought about maybe doing some things. It would never be a full-time thing, but there are times where I've wanted to talk about stuff. So I might come back in some way. But there are other things I'm working on that the podcast was kind of like cutting into, and I'm going to continue with those things. And who knows, maybe one day, I wouldn't count on it, but maybe one day we'll see. You'll at least find me here now and then at the very least.
Oh yeah. You'll be back late, hopefully later this year, like to continue our exploration of the Wilson verse.
That's right.
More good things to come there. And who knows, maybe eventually we'll wander into the Pumpkins world as well.
I would do that. Another Wilson verse. We kind of talked about a Wilson verse today as well.
We did.
Keeps coming up.
We really did. That's insane.
Yep. It is.
Oh man.
So, yeah, always love talking music with you. So thank you for indulging me and having me on to talk about my favorite band. I do appreciate it. And it's always a pleasure speaking with the Sly Dog. You don't make me nervous. I'm not Brian Lennon. This was a pleasure.
Thank you. And it's always a pleasure speaking with you. It's always fun hanging out with you. If we live closer, I feel like we'd have like a regular podcast, honestly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, if we lived closer, I'd be living with the two of you.
I can only imagine. Oh, man. All right. Well, till next time, friends. I'm the Sly Dog. Peace, love, taboo, taboo.
steam dream
and plunge below the water
line. Down, 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 between beams to the gloom room
among the seaweed and the slime.
Listening to the Sly Dog Music Cast. If you want to know what's going on, follow me on Twitter at Sly Dog Music Cast or Facebook at Sly Dog Music Cast. Thanks again for listening. Peace, love, and music.